This is The Think Tank, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. With Dr. Mike O'Neill and hosted by Mike Russell. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, we are back in the think tank. Mike O'Neill and Mike Russell. Mike Russell is not here. He's once again gone fishing. Co-guest host, Sharon Middleman, out of the newsroom. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
We're going to talk all things Prop 123. We have here two guests. Frank Riggs is a former congressman from California, moved to the Valley 10, 12 years ago, thereabouts.
Actually going on 16.
Going on 16. who cares?
Yes.
Over a decade, that makes you a native.
Yes. Well, I'm married to a native daughter. My wife, Kathy, was born in Tucson. When her dad, who was stationed in the Air Force, was at Davis Moffett.
Yeah, that was the old joke around here. If the paint's dried on your house, you're a native. And Jana Boomersbach, longtime Valley journalist and author of a series of fascinating novels. We can plug those later on. But let me start out with what I think is a fair and inarguable history of how we got to Prop 123. I'm going to go to you, Frank, as a proponent. And if I got any of this wrong, absolutely correct me. Okay. But basically, some years ago, there was a proposition, a citizen initiative, Prop 301, that provided for mandatory inflation funding of education, K-12 education in the state. And that was operative for a number of years. And then the Great Recession hit around 07, 08. And the legislator said, there's basically no money. We're not going to fund this. A lawsuit developed by various educational groups that said, you've got to comply with this. It went to court. Every court that heard it said that they were right. And the legislature has to pay up, but it's still in appeal. And it's also not at all clear what the mechanism is for getting a court. A court can basically rule on something, but it's not clear that they can mandate a legislative appropriation. Right. So there was, this goes on for years in the courts, 5 years. Thank you.
Right.
Governor Doug Ducey is elected. He steps in and brokers a compromise. Is that a fair statement so far?
Yeah, that's a fair statement.
Okay, and part of this compromise is that there will be a vote on Prop 123, which, and I'll let you say what it does. At one level, it provides for about on the dollar level, it provides for about 70%, making up about 70% of what the original.
That's correct, and it settles the inflation funding lawsuit. In other words, the parties to the lawsuit, the plaintiffs who brought the lawsuit, have agreed that subject to the passage of Prop 123 by Arizona voters, they will dismiss the lawsuit. They'll dismiss it with prejudice, which means they cannot bring a similar suit at a later date. Mm-hmm. And I think you sketched it pretty well, Mike. I mean, the fact of the matter is Prop 301, well-intentioned, said that we ought to increase funding for our K-12 public schools, both district and charter, annually at least the rate of inflation. But along comes the Great Recession, right?
Was that inflation plus enrollment growth?
Inflation.
Just inflation.
Yeah, inflation.
And what about the sales tax hike that they gave to pay for that?
Now, that was a separate initiative that still remains in effect. But along comes the Great Recession, right? Suddenly, I mean, revenues to state government dramatically decline. Suddenly, state government faces a $3 billion deficit, has to resort to sort of smoke and mirrors accounting, doing things like selling off state office buildings, including the Capitol buildings, leasing them back, pledging future tobacco tax revenues. And frankly, during the recession, we experienced a period of deflation, not inflation. But the school districts, beginning with Cape Creek Unified, where I happen to live, brought the lawsuit. Like you said, Mike, it's been proceeding in the courts. It was upheld at the Superior Court level here in Maricopa County. It was appealed to the appellate court. And the appellate court basically said in so many words, look, we want the duly elected representatives of the people, i.e. the governor and the executive branch, and the legislators, the legislative branch of government, to resolve this matter. And that's what Prop 123 would do by providing 70% of the inflation funding and doing that by providing $3.5 billion over 10 years, 60% of which would come from the state land trust.
Let me just interrupt it with a point of fact, because I know that when you start talking hundreds of millions or billions, nobody knows what that – as best I understand it, on an annual basis, it's about $300 million, and even that people don't understand. I think that amounts to – and correct me if I've got this wrong – about $300 per pupil.
Right. It's an increase in the base level funding, the per pupil funding for all public schools, on average of $300 per kid.
A total of $300 per kid. It's not an increase of $300.
Well, it's an increase over today.
It's an increase over today, but we would still be spending per day, per kid, $300.
Right. Right.
We're and
it's $300 more than it would have been without it.
Correct.
No. A total of $300.
No, it's $300 more.
Oh, no, you're right. Yeah. You're right.
And it's based, that's based on what we call in Arizona ADM, average daily membership, in other words, the enrollment of that particular school. But what's important to note about the state land trust, right?
At the time, no, that's the other part.
Okay.
Explain what, because this not only provides funding, where does it get the money and what other kinds of things are involved?
At the time of our statehood, over a century ago, Congress placed almost 11 million acres of land, Arizona land, in trust.
I think that was federal land, wasn't it?
It was federal land placed in trust to be managed by the state of Arizona for the benefit of certain beneficiaries, the chief of which are our K-12 public schools.
Mm-hmm. And not unlike what was done with a whole lot of other states.
Correct. And since then, over that century plus period, we've disposed of 1.7 million of the 11 million acres. We have 9.2 million acres of this land remaining in trust, which was valued at $70 billion in 2013. Mm-hmm. So under Prop 123, what we're talking about is taking the earnings of the state land trust, the Permanent Endowment Land Trust, which are investment earnings, proceeds from the lease of this trust land, and proceeds from the sale of trust land, taking these funds and using them to provide 60% of the total $3.5 billion over a 10-year period.
Okay, so Frank, so people who are against this are saying that doing this would raid the land trust. Is that true or is that not true?
It's absolutely not true. Unless you can, engage in distorted thinking. And the fact of the matter is that between 2011 and 2015, as the economy recovered, the trust fund grew 8.24%.
Because the land got more valuable.
The land got more valuable. We, even though the funds are invested on a very conservative basis, in a very conservative portfolio, it earned 8.24% average annual growth over that period of time. Yet, the distribution level remained at 2.5%. So those earnings accrued in the state land trust and arguably should have been distributed over that time period, and that's what Prop 123 is doing. It's catching up with it to argue that, well, because we didn't distribute the funds then, it's now part of the corpus of principle.
We got just a few, give you a half minute to give for this segment. I want to give you the conclusion.
Okay.
Why should people vote for this?
Well,
what's the essence of that?
Because it resolves the inflation funding lawsuit, so we can stop paying lawyers and start getting more money into our public schools. The Joint Legislative Budget Committee, the nonpartisan arm of the state legislature, says even with the higher distributions, the state land trust will grow by over $1 billion over 10 years. And Bob Robb, who I think we all respect, a conservative columnist, libertarian leanings, the token conservative, if you will, in the editorial staff of the Arizona Republic, says in reality, Prop 123 mostly gives schools undistributed earnings that they should have been receiving all along.
Okay, that's your best shot. When we come back, Jana Broomersbach gets her best shot as to why we should not vote for Prop 123. We're in the think tank on KTAR.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we're back in the think tank. We've heard from Frank Riggs, an advocate of Prop 123. Jana Broomersbach, you see things a little bit differently.
I do. I think this is the worst thing that's ever coming to the voters of Arizona. I think it's a con. I think it is a scam. I think it will destroy education in Arizona. And I'm for the first time in my entire life, Mike, I am voting no on an education proposition. I have never not supported education until this moment. And I've really been torn, but I started studying Prop 123 and found that it is a mess. Somebody called it, this is about marching off the cliff with a gun at your head. Somebody else called it, we're not robbing Peter to pay Paul, we're robbing Peter to pay Peter. The League of Women Voters calls it a fraud on the people, and I call it eating your seed corn. This is going to the inheritance of our kids and taking this money when we don't need to go there. We have $660 million in surplus money this year, as well as a $460 million rainy day fund. That's almost $1 billion. We also have $1 billion in tax cuts that haven't even gone into effect yet that we're waiting for. And this year, they want $26 million more tax cuts for business. I mean, the legislature has shown itself repeatedly to be a foe of education. They are not pro, especially public education in the K-12 system. They love public education when it's a charter school, which is really a kind of a phony public education system. And they love private schools, but they are out to destroy the public education system in Arizona, and this is one of their big steps.
Okay, so Jana, so one might say to you, here is money that's going to go to the kids, it's going to go to the schools, and you're saying no. What's wrong with you?
And I'm saying no because in this bill is also some triggers that will forever keep us in the basement. You realize that the U.S. Census says on a per capita basis, Arizona spends less on education than any state in the nation. We are 48th, 46th, 49th, sometimes 50th. This will keep us there forever because if we get to 49% of the state budget going to education, there is a trigger that says they don't have to fund any inflation money. And if we get to 50%, it says you can cut the base funding altogether, which means that we will never get out of the base.
I believe it says you have to.
You have, 50. Yes. At 50, you have
to. In other words, if we elected a legislature that wanted to spend more, they would be prohibited from doing so.
It is putting a horrible poison pill in that bill, in our Constitution, which is going to doom education forever. And if you trust this legislature on education, look at what they did in the current budget that's going to the governor now. They cut education by $21 million. They are increasing private prisons by $24 million. They can't even be decent enough to give education more money in a year when they're asking voters to go into the trust fund and take money out of that. And I think the level that we're taking money out of that trust fund is going to damage that trust fund. And I don't just say that. It is the current treasurer and five former state treasurers, all of whom are Republicans, who are saying, don't do this. Do not do. If you want to take more money out of the trust fund, then do it at a decent level that will not eat away at the principal.
Clarify something for me. Is the money from the trust fund, is this principal or interest?
This is supposed to be interest, but they're cutting so deeply that it's going to go into principal. In the last 15 years, we've had like 6.6% return. They're asking us to take 6.9% out for the next 10 years. And at the end of 10 years, that's supposed to stop. In the meantime, by the way, don't forget, not only did we tell the legislature to fund inflation, which is they have refused to do, and by passing this bill, we're rewarding them for breaking the law, but we also passed a 0.6% sales tax to fund education, and they didn't spend that money on education.
But
how are we supposed to trust them with any money now?
That's ignoring the fact that we went through the Great Recession.
And we're out of the Great Recession.
Well, I know, but we're still recovering from it. You know, the trust fund has grown in value over the last 5 years from $2.8 billion to $5 billion.
But it's not your piggy bank. It is the inheritance of the children of Arizona.
Congress established the trust fund primarily to support public education.
Right.
And that's all public schools, district and charter. And charter schools are public schools, by the way. That must take all.
Some are.
No, they're all public schools. Some are privately governed, privately owned, but they're all public schools. The fact of the matter is that we are, with Prop 123, we are absolutely complying in full faith with the spirit and intent of the congressional legislation, the Enabling Act at the time of statehood. That, number one. Number two, the fact of the matter is, I hear people talking about, well, let's use the surplus, let's use the rainy day fund. But as I said a moment ago, we have these future liabilities to state government. We have,
which are tax cuts.
We have the mortgages on the state-owned properties that were sold and leased back, and there's a buyback provision. So government, if we're ever going to own those assets that were originally paid for with state taxpayer funds, we have to fulfill that obligation. It's not like there is a lot of money. And the tax cut being proposed, by the way, in the state budget is a very modest one. It's $8 million. It's for
$26 million.
Well, they're still discussing, but the core tax cut is $8 million for instant expensing.
But the other tax cuts that were voted for in the past that have yet to take effect are a lot bigger than that.
They're almost a billion dollars.
But again, they're
coming in. And we could cancel those. I mean, we could cancel those today. The governor and the legislature could cancel those tax cuts today and say, you know, listen, we put those tax cuts in and it wasn't a very wise idea. We have these obligations in Arizona. So instead of robbing from the state trust fund, let's spend the money we've got. That's what they could say.
Well, those corporate tax cuts were to stimulate economic growth and job
creation. And where is the economic growth?
Well, that's a good – according to an article I read the other day, we are just back to square one. We have just now recovered the jobs we lost. A day or two later, you have Intel announcing 500 job layoffs here in the Valley, and Freeport-McMoRan, the big mining company, announcing layoffs.
So wouldn't you think those companies would have stayed here if these great tax cuts would have been as glorious as the governor says they are? No. They have not given us any economic advantage. They have just simply given business an advantage of keeping more money and driving down the general fund of the state of Arizona so we can't do the things that we need to do. That's what I think.
Well, again, I want to go back to the fact that Prop 123, there's an open argument whether we even will have to tap the principal, the corpus of the fund. If the fund continues to perform as it has, we probably
won't. We really can't know exactly because we don't know whether or not it's going to
No one has that crystal ball, and if they do, I'd like them to be my stockbroker. But but the fact of the matter is it's a good balance, 60% mm-hmm. coming out of the state land trust. And 40% coming out of the general fund.
And it's 7 cents on the dollar for what the court said they owe those kids.
You know, what each of you says, Frank, what you say and Jana, what you say, when I listen to you, everything you say, both of you, makes total sense. I agree with you. This is such a confusing and convoluted issue. I'm hoping when we come back from the break.
We come back. I want to dissect some of the specific components of this proposition. We'll take them one by one. Back with Jana Boomersbach and Frank Riggs in the Think Tank on KTAR.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, Prop 123, we're going to vote on this May 17th, I believe it is. Yes or no, vote of the citizens. We've been talking about that with a proponent and opponent. It has a number of specific proposals. We've hit on a couple of them. I want to sort of walk us through several of these and let us engage each one of these. One of these is a trigger. It says that if our sales, and we got to watch it, this gets a little hairy, but if sales tax and employment growth each fall below 2% in a given year, then the legislature could suspend the inflation increases that it otherwise has to provide. And if those two things, sales tax and employment, are less than 1%, they have to fund the suspension of that. They have to suspend that. Even if they don't want to.
Exactly. It is setting in stone. See, the Constitution is like a great big piece of granite, and you carve into that, and that's pretty impenetrable. And they are carving into our Constitution a provision that will forever keep us at the bottom of the hole. We are at the hole now. We are one of the worst states in the nation, the lowest state in the nation for per capita spending on education. We have cut education in this state more than any other state. There is no state in the nation that has a cap on education funding. We would be the first one to do that. What a thing to lead in. My God. Give us another black eye in the nation.
Well, I agree that K-12 education has been underfunded, no question about that. But what these triggers are doing is they're trying to anticipate the possibility of another severe economic downturn and giving the legislature, who are the duly elected representatives of the people, the flexibility to deal with another recession in a period when revenues decline and we have very little, if any, inflation.
Let's say there is another recession. How is it providing the legislature discretion if it says if that employment growth is less than 1%, you have to suspend the inflation increase?
Taking that argument to the
Well,
sir. Well, sorry. Go ahead.
I was asking Frank.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Employment is the best indicator of how the economy is performing. So if we have a period when there's little or no job growth and unemployment begins to rise, the fact of the matter is we are, the economists define that as a recession, if not a depression. And so what they're basically saying is the future legislature, okay, that in these dire circumstances, of a severe and sustained economic downturn, you do not have to, you shall not comply with the provisions of Prop 123. Prop 123 is locking in this substantial increase in the distributions from the state land trust for a decade.
For 10 years.
Say Prop 123 passes. Who's going to watch it? Who's going to make sure that everything is done the way it's supposed to be done? I mean, who's the monitor?
That's a very good question, because they've co-opted the Education Association, they've co-opted the School Boards Association. They have basically forced education into this box, saying you either take this deal or you get nothing. And so they both caved and supported this idea. So have several other people who you would think should know better.
They are
so
kind of between a rock and a hard place. I've heard stories about teachers who've been given two sets of contracts for next year. Mm-hmm. They say this is what you get if it passes. This is what it gets if you don't.
Yeah. And I feel terrible for the teachers of Arizona. They have suffered forever and ever and ever, but they're going to suffer even more in the future if we allow this to become the law.
I don't agree, because I've visited a lot of schools throughout the state. And, of course, I think we've all heard those tales of teachers who've had to come out of pocket for basic supplies. The governor cites a teacher who told him that she has more students than she does textbooks. So again, it's not like we're using the state land trust for a purpose other than what it was originally intended by Congress. You ask who will monitor it, well, of course you will. The Fourth Estate will, number one. Number two, our elected representatives, the governor and the members of the state legislature, have, when they take that oath of office, they have a solemn oath, an obligation to enforce it and to comply with the law.
The same oath that said they were supposed to fund inflation, the same oath that said they were supposed to spend the 6% of tax money on education that they didn't spend, the same legislature who has an oath that says we're supposed to cover education and this year cutting it by $24 million. This is not a legislature you can trust. Anybody who trusts this legislature to do the right thing about education is, I think, way off base, because they have shown themselves again and again and again to be hostile to education. They have cut the university budget down to a thread. So they are not somebody who looks at education and says this is important for our future. And I'll tell you, all these corporate tax cuts mean not a damn thing when you're cutting your education program up so far apart that no decent company would ever come to your state because they can't get a decent education in your state.
Let me move to another trigger. This is the one, and we hit on this a little bit before. It says if K-12 spending reaches 49% of the state budget, they can suspend the inflation increase. Right. If it reaches 50, they have to.
Right. Right.
Yeah. That's half of all state revenues.
Yep.
And bear in mind, okay, you know, the old saying goes that there are three principal responsibilities of state government: to educate, incarcerate, and Medicaid. Well, the incarcerate is the entire criminal justice system, right? Mm-hmm. It's public safety, it's courts, you know, it's corrections, our prisons. In terms of medicating, I mean, there's a debate now about the children's low-income children's health insurance program, but we have tremendous needs in the area of child safety in the Department of Child Services and Child Protective Services. So I say that's a good a good barometer. If 50% of total state revenue dedicated to K-12 public education strikes me as a reasonable balance with the other responsibilities
of
state
government.
Let me
ask you this, Frank, and
okay.
I know Jane is chafing at the bit, but
yes,
I want a specific. Okay, let's say we leave education funding kind of where it's at, and
we start
to cut down on mass incarceration. We decide that that policy hasn't worked. If the legislature were to do that and the funding for prisons went way down, that would take the percentage that was devoted to education and make it higher without even giving them another nickel. So doesn't this constrain future legislatures in terms of changing the direction of policy?
I don't think it does. And if, again, the fact of the matter is that establishing essentially in the Constitution that there is a 50% limit on state revenues dedicated to K-12 public education strikes me as reasonable. I mean, Jenna mentioned a point, and it concerns me, which are the large cuts that were made last year, some of which they're proposing to restore this year, to our state university system. I mean, I look at public education holistically. I look at it as kindergarten through the 20th year, K-20, which includes higher ed, includes our fabulous state universities. So I want to go back just very quickly on one point that Jenna made, and that is one of the things that our legislative leaders and their lawyers contend is that even during the Great Recession, there were years where they funded K-12 public education at a rate higher than inflation, yet they get no credit for that. So, you know, again, we can either resolve this and move forward as a state and do the right thing
Jan is chafing, but I do want to ask you one more specific here. Is there a restriction on state funding, the amount the state can fund on any other area other than education?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Yeah, there's not. There is not. To suggest that we've ever been generous with our school system is absurd. Listen, this is a state that's decided that private prisons owned by their pals and corporate tax breaks that benefit their pals are more important than educating our children. We have been in the bottom of this education cycle for a long time since we started these tax cuts, and we're going to stay there forever and ever if we pass this bill.
Okay,
and
let's say it doesn't pass.
Yes.
How do you see funding for education in the future? How do you see it, you know, in a few weeks, next year?
I see a huge public outcry that's going to demand that we reform and revamp and hold up to the thing. We've still got this court case pending. The court has said to the legislature, you owe these kids millions and billions of dollars. You owe these kids because you have screwed these kids over. You have refused to fund things that the voters specifically told you to fund. And so I think that the courts will step in and they'll demand that this thing be paid. And at some point, you've got to have some level of decency and say, yes, we got to follow the law.
I'm sorry, I lost my thread there. it's about what happens if they do. But won't that take years?
That could take years, but there's also going to be lawsuits, especially if this thing does pass. Mm-hmm. You can see that there's going to be lawsuits that are going to challenge this constitutional. Remember, this is bedrock stuff. This is Enabling Act stuff from the United States government. So this is not something we
Because of the original federal grant.
Because of the original federal grant.
And the possibility that you're messing with
those. So this is bedrock
drugs.
Stuff okay. that we're dealing with
More
now.
Lawsuits, huh? Just
More
what
lawsuits.
We need.
And
so
then,
you're saying either way we're getting lawsuits?
Not the case. The Congressional Research Service, which is just as it sounds, as I can say as a former congressman, the research arm of the U.S. Congress has already opined that Prop 123 is consistent with the Enabling Act as amended in 1998. Furthermore, if anyone brings a lawsuit, I'm sure the Arizona Congressional delegation on a bipartisan basis will spearhead legislation, again, clarifying that Prop 123 is consistent with the Enabling Act. I hear so much, and we all know this. We've seen the angst, the frustration, the widespread feelings of disenfranchisement because government doesn't work. Do we really want one branch of government, the unelected branch of government, for all intents and purposes, the judicial branch of government, to resolve this matter when we have a compromise with bipartisan support by the executive and legislative branches of government, the duly elected representatives of the people? Do we really want that? Do we want this matter to fester in the courts for more and more years? Or do we want to get it resolved now, move our state forward, do the right thing, again, by our parents, our teachers, and our kids?
Are we going to amend our state constitution in a shotgun marriage? That's what we've got here. We've got a shotgun marriage. We've got people who are forced into these positions. And I will tell you this. This legislature has been so dishonest with the voters of Arizona and the taxpayers of Arizona that I have no trust that they will even spend this money where they're supposed to spend it in the education system, because they have told us in the past, we've passed taxes that they haven't spent on education. We have told them specifically to do things they haven't done.
One of those, and let me get to this because one more thing. We're looking at a cliff, are we not?
I mean, we're looking at a cliff.
We're two of them. One is there was a 6/10 sales tax. 0.6% for sales tax that expires in 2021.
Right.
So we're looking at that's coming up on us now. And the other thing is that this taking from the state land trust, a higher percentage from the state land trust, that lasts only until 2025. What happens then?
Well, obviously it could be continued based on the performance of the fund. But the anticipation is that inflation will be funded entirely from the general fund when Prop 123 expires. And the fact of the matter is, yes, we know we have to deal with the potential, with the expiration of the half-cent sales tax. But this puts in place the framework, the groundwork, if you will, for a solution that's for a decade. That's a long time in government. and it provides immediate, badly needed funding this current fiscal year, and then again over the next 10 years, for every K-12 public school in the state.
Okay, I think that's a good summary on your part. Jana, your last concluding thought.
Mike, I'm so distrustful of this legislature, and I so hate the secret things inside this bill, the triggers, the 50%, keeping us in the basement forever. Those things, they aren't honest things. If you wanted to just give kids money, you wouldn't be saying to them, hey, well, we're going to be sure that we can, you know, cut you down if it ever gets this high. Being the only state that would ever cap education, being the only thing that's ever capped in the state of Arizona. So I think that the distress level is so high that I cannot vote for 1-2-3.
Well, thank you both. Frank Riggs, Jana Boomersbach. We'll be back in the think tank to wrap this up on KTAR.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
All right, we are finishing up our discussion on Prop 123. I'm Sharon Middleman, sitting in for Mike Russell, along with Dr. Mike O'Neill. We've been talking to Jana Boomersbach, ace journalist, longtime journalist in Arizona. She's now a novelist. And Frank Riggs, a congressman from California, former congressman who moved to Arizona a number of years ago. And we've had quite the, intense discussion. This is such an emotional issue. It's in my estimation, it's convoluted. I think it's hard to understand. And I think it's difficult for the average voter to figure out which way to go. It seems black and white, but it's not.
I think there's one aspect that's particularly gut-wrenching for teachers and, frankly, for proponents of education. And that is the fact that if you vote yes, it puts a little bit more money into the education system, about $300 per student. I like to talk about per student because when we get into the millions and millions, nobody understands what that really means. You can make any number large by talking about 10 years or 20-year outlays. And a lot of that is just inflation anyway. It puts about $300 per student in their pocket right away. And thereafter, it's not a boon, but it basically protects that for inflation. But, and then this is where I think this gets tricky, is there are a whole list of other provisions of this. And what they do is to allow the legislature to either opt out of future inflation funding, or at certain levels, it even prohibits them from doing so. And that's the unprecedented part. As Jana pointed out, there's no state that has a constitutional cap on how much can be spent by education by an elected legislature. This would put that in.
Okay, so in real simple terms, let's paint the picture of what the world would look like if Prop 123 passes and what the world in Arizona would look like if Prop 123 doesn't pass. What does this mean?
The quick and easy part, they get 300 every per student bump of $300 right away. That's the carrot. The stick is you are constraining future spending. You put a cap on it. It almost guarantees we're near the bottom of the barrel, and we're, you know, whether I can't say whether it'll be 50 or 49 or 48, somebody else might cut, but we're going to be at the bottom of the barrel, and that changing that would become way harder. And even a legislature couldn't do that to a great extent, or would be constrained from doing that, because some of these prohibitions are put into the Constitution. You know, for example, we have not necessarily a severe recession, but we have a year when the growth rate for employment and sales tax is under 1%. Okay, that's not a booming great year, but it's not a depression either. Under those circumstances, the legislature would be prohibited from inflation funding for education.
Well, at the end of the day here, do you see more lawsuits coming forward?
It sure sounded that way, didn't it? I heard
about lawsuits. No, I mean, please, no.
Yeah. And nobody likes that because,
it's tied up in court and then nothing happens.
Two bad things happen. One is it takes years.
Right.
And number
right.
two, it costs money right. and everything gets put on hold. Now, this Prop 123 was the result of a lawsuit and an attempt to settle it. But what we heard here is a strong suggestion that even if it passes, there are questionable things in it, like, for example, that trust fund is not the purview of the state of Arizona. That was a grant at statehood from the federal government of federal lands that were put in trust for the state to use for education. Now, I'm not a lawyer, and my guess is they could litigate this way beyond my capacity to tell. All right, but this much I know. If anything is in any kind of a gray area, it can and probably will get litigated. So they'd be taking money out of that at a rate that somebody could say that's not consistent with the purposes of the grant.
You know, one thing that's so interesting about this issue is that one would think that this would be Democrats on one side and Republicans on the other. Yet this issue really crosses party lines. You've got Governor Ducey,
yes,
who's in favor of it,
yep,
and former candidate Fred Duval, also
yep,
in favor
yep
of it. They're on the same side.
And you have a very conservative Trump-supporting state treasurer and four prior state treasurers, five of them all Republicans,
right,
against it, and largely on the basis of the raid of that state trust fund. Now, you have some Democrats in favor of it. The, you know, education establishment, a lot of them say, they're feeling so starved for support that a little bit of money right now can be an irresistible kind of a carrot. But some others in the educational system look at that and say, but it constrains what we're going to get in the future. And so there's a long-term cost. So I think this was, yes, this is complicated, but unfortunately, I think it was made complicated on purpose.
By whom?
By the people who forged the, I think in order to get the votes in the legislature, to get them to go along with increasing the funding on a one-time basis, they had to put these other things in that would constrain future spending by people who didn't
conspiracy?
Want to spend.
Conspiracy? Am I hearing conspiracy theory?
Well, I mean, they wanted to put stuff in to constrain activities that were in a direction that they didn't want to take. You know,
okay,
if you don't want to spend that much on education, you put, if you're going to give them something, you make it difficult to give any more in the future is kind of what that's, you had to get a buy-in of the legislature. And basically, yeah, they bought votes. But that's not unlike any other legislation, but it, that's what makes it complicated. And that's why it is not a Democrat versus Republican issue. And a lot of it came down to sort of to Jana's point. Do you trust the legislature to administer this or not?
I don't know. Is there anything we can do to help the voters decide? How do we make it more clear?
God, I don't know.
it's very muddy. It's, well, you know, and it's such a difficult issue to decide. Like I said before, it's just not black and white. Doesn't everybody want to see education get more money?
Well, no, I don't think so. Everybody would like to see education better. There are those a lot of them in the legislature who say that the way to make education better is basically to kibosh the public schools and put everybody in charter and private schools. So,
okay.
You know,
you want to
those who say that?
Who's going to pay for that?
Well, that's the question.
All right. This has been The Think Tank. I'm Sharon Middleman, along with Dr. Mike O'Neill. We've been talking about Prop 123, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot more talk on Prop 123 before the May 17th election.